Okay, in this lesson, we're going to talk about the step-by-step process for actually selling the house from beginning to end. We've spent a lot of time in the last lesson talking about why houses don't sell, so now that we've covered that, let's get them sold. So here you are with your first deal under contract to either buy a house, lease an option house, or option a house, and only a few days or weeks away from cashing it in. And that's great, but before we start the process of selling junkers to bargain hunters or finding lease option tenants or finding the cash buyers, there's a very important first step we must complete, and that is that we've got to do a title search. So either a title company or attorney must do a title search for us to verify that there's no liens on the property other than that disclosed by the seller. And also that the current owner that we have a contract with is the actual owner and the only owner, and there are no other parties of interest. Until this process is completed, you're really not ready to sell the house or, in fact, put a lease option tenant in it. The last thing you want to do is put a property under contract, get somebody's money, put them in the house, promise that you're going to sell the house to them, and then later find out that you have some kind of a title problem and you can't deliver title to them. Most states will allow title companies to close the transactions. Some will require attorneys to close. And in California, you have escrow companies that will do the closing for you. Whatever your state requires, wherever you want to do the closing, or whoever you can get to do closings, that's where you want to order the title search through. So a call to a local title company or a local attorney will acquaint you with the right answer to that. You only have to do that once, and then you'll know from then on. So let's start by checking the title on ugly houses first, because it is a little different process than getting a title search done on a pretty house. If the property you're buying is an ugly house and it's listed with an agent, he or she will probably want to handle this for you. However, you don't have to let the agent order the title. You can simply ask the agent or tell the agent that you want to do it yourself. And if you do want to, if you do want them to handle it, just tell them to go ahead and order a title for you. And if you do want to handle it yourself, then you're going to have to find the title company that you want to use. And, gosh, you can pick up the phone book and do that, or you can ask a friend that's in the real estate business, or you can ask a real estate agent who they use. And on the first one, you're just going to have to scout out whoever you're going to use and do a little bit of homework before you order the title. Shouldn't take you long, because every city's full of them, and they're all over the place. So just find one and then keep going as I describe here. You may need the legal description of the property to order a title search. If the house is listed, your real estate agent will provide that for you. You're certainly going to need the address. If you have the address, you can get a title search done even if you don't have the legal description. You can get the legal description off the paperwork from the seller. If you're in the house getting a deed, the seller's got all that information for you. Just get it while you're there. If you're not in the house getting a deed, if you're just getting a purchase and sale agreement, the legal's not available, don't worry about it. Because worst case, if you just call in the address, tell the title company you don't have a legal description, they will certainly pull up their database service real quick and match the legal to the address that you give them. You certainly want to know the seller's last name. So if you have the seller's last name and the property address, you shouldn't have any problem ordering a title search. If you're wholesaling a junker, either call or visit the title company. You really should visit the title company before you order the title if you're wholesaling a junker and you intend to assign the contract. You must make sure that the closing agent is on the same page with what you're going to do and that they won't create a problem when it comes time to close. This is a very important step on your first deal. A, you get to know the closing agent, you get to create a relationship, but you also want to sit down and have a conversation about this is what I intend to do. I've got a property under contract. I intend to assign the contract. Are you going to have a problem with that? Is there anything I need to know? And just basically feel them out and make sure it's not a problem. I think you'll discover that when you are assigning a contract, most closing agents understand that and they know how to handle it. And your objective here is to have the title company or the attorney collect your fee, the difference between what you've agreed to buy the property for and what you're going to sell it for, and they send you your assignment fee. You don't really collect that from your wholesale buyer. The closing agent collects it and forwards it to you, because that really shouldn't be paid to you until the property closes. When you're having this conversation, you should agree upon the price that they're going to charge you for a title search. Your only concern right now is a title search, because you're not going to buy a title policy. When you're flipping a junker, the buyer will buy a title policy. You won't, but you're going to have to order the title search before you even start looking for the buyer. And so you're going to have to find out what that's going to cost you. It'll cost you anywhere from free to $50, $75. I've even heard stories about some title companies wanting $150 or higher. Frankly, if you're paying more than $75, I think I would shop around. If you actually knew how little work there is involved in a title search, once you're in the business for a while, you'll know that it's not really that big a deal. It's not that time-consuming of an activity. And frankly, it's just not worth more than $75 just to do a title search. So don't make sure they don't take advantage of you, and just shop around. If you get four, five, six title companies telling you the same thing and want charging you about the same price for a title search, then you know that's what you're going to have to pay. All right. Checking the title on a pretty house is a little different, though. It's the same process, but there's some things we ought to discuss. If you're checking the title on a pretty house, you intend to lease option out to a tenant buyer, you should make it very clear to your title agent that you will not, that the closing will not take place right away, that you'll be leasing out the house. In this case, you won't be needing a title policy at this time, only a title search, and therefore the fee you negotiate will come out of your pocket, and it's just a cost of doing business. So you can't expect a title company to go do a title search for you, knowing that they're not going to convert that into title insurance where they really make their money, because you're not going to bring a cash buyer to the closing table right now, so nobody's going to be buying a title insurance policy in this case. Now remember, now we're either getting a deed on a property and then putting a lease option tenant in it. If you're paying cash for the property and you actually close on it, there will be a title policy, because you will not pay cash on a property unless you get title insurance. But if you're just got a contract on a property and you intend to flip it to a wholesale buyer, then you do not need title insurance. You just need to make sure it's a go by having them check the title. If you're getting a deed on a property, in my case, I don't buy title insurance. I just get the title checked and make sure that there's not a title problem and make sure I'm cleared to sell it. Title insurance is going to cost you several hundred dollars, and in the higher priced properties, that can be a substantial amount of money. And since I don't have any money invested in the property and I don't have any risk in the property, really, then I don't get a title policy. However, if I am getting a deed on the property and I am putting up money or I am at risk, then I will insist on getting a title and policy, and I'll be happy to pay the title policy fee if I have to. You'll check with your local title company, your attorney, and they will tell you what it costs to actually get title insurance. Do not let your realtor get wind that you're doing an assignment of contract. Your realtor should know that if you're buying a junker, you're paying cash for the property, because you are. You're making an all-cash offer on the property. The realtor just doesn't have to know that it's not your cash. And frankly, it shouldn't make any difference. You're bringing a cash buyer to the closing table. The realtor really shouldn't care where the cash comes from, whether it's your cash or your buyer's cash. But I wouldn't make an issue out of it, because some of them just won't understand it and they're going to get a little skittish. So this is not something that you need to disclose. It's not relevant to the realtor's deal. They're going to get their commission regardless of where the cash comes from. It doesn't change the contract that you agreed to buy any way whatsoever. When you're satisfied, the closing agent will perform without becoming an obstacle, which is nothing more than having a conversation and making sure you're on the same page. You may order a title check, and at that point you deliver a copy of your purchase agreement to your title company or your closing agent, and as soon as you get the assignment of contract, you'll deliver that as well. So to recap here just for a moment, if I get an agreement to buy a property that I intend to pay cash for with the intention of wholesaling it, I simply order a title search after I've had a conversation with my title company for my initial deal. And then when the title search is okay, or at the time you ordered, either one, you can fax them over the contract so they can start a file. If you're going to get a deed on a property and your intention is to lease option it out, you won't need to fax an agreement to the title company, because they're really isn't going to be a closing that they're going to perform at this time, so you simply order the title search. When you do that, you should tell them that you want the file number. You're going to need a file number because when you call them back 2 or 3 days after you order the title search, you're going to refer to that file number, and they can go right to the file without having to do a lot of looking it up. A file number will be a 4 or 5 or 6 digit file number. Just write it down on your contract when you order it. Now, if you don't feel comfortable with your closing agent, I strongly suggest you just find another one. You're not going to change the attitude of anyone you're working with. You're not going to want to do business with a closing agent that has a problem with anything you're doing. You're not there to do a real estate seminar. Just go find another closing agent and forget them. And don't let anybody talk you out of doing real estate deals because they don't like what you're doing or they don't understand what you're doing. And I will tell you, that is not uncommon at all to find closing agents who really don't understand our business. But frankly, you'll find more of them that do than don't. This whole process shouldn't take you more than 2, 3, 4 days to get a title search. And it's not that big a deal. Now, there are four steps to selling houses. The first step is getting the house ready to sell. The second step is to attract buyers. Third step is to pre-screen those buyers. And the fourth step is actually closing the sale. So I'm going to go through those steps individually and cover them in detail. Step one, getting the house ready to sell. Once you know the title is clear, the next move is to prepare the house for sale, and this won't be difficult because in most cases you're selling wholesale junkers as is, and that means you don't touch them. And in fact, rarely do I ever even clean one up. I put it under contract as it is, and I will run the ad that we'll discuss here in a minute, and I'll attract people, and I'll send them over there, and I won't touch the house. I won't even go back to the house. I just won't lay a finger on it. Now, if it's a pretty house deal, it should be in good condition. So your only concern is when can it be occupied. So when you wholesale a house, you won't need to put up a sign for sale. In fact, you shouldn't in most cases because you don't have the right to put a sign on a property because you don't own it. You have a contract to purchase it. So you should not do any work on the property, and you should not put a sign on a property that you don't own. A sign is just not necessary to attract attention to a junker anyway. And in fact, if you're using an agent or you're buying an institutionally owned house, you'll find it difficult to get possession of the property during your escrow or get permission to clean it up, and you won't get a key most likely. It becomes a liability issue for them. But if the seller is not an institution, and you're not working through a realtor, it becomes a whole lot easier. You can do pretty much anything that you can get permission to do, and if you're dealing with a FSBO, that's pretty much anything that you need to do. Remember, this house is an ugly, probably vacant junker, and the person that you're buying it from really doesn't have that much interest in it, or it wouldn't be an ugly, vacant junker. So if you do decide you want to clean up the yard or remove trash from it, then just simply ask for permission to do so and put that in your purchase and sale agreement. You should also get a key as well so you can have clear access to the house. Now, if you're dealing with a FSBO and you have access to the house and you have permission and you have a key, then obviously there's no reason why you can't put a sign in the front yard if you want to. So to recap what I just said now, if you have permission to enter the house and clean up the house, then you have permission to put a sign on the house. If you are working, however, with an institution or a realtor, you will not enter the house, you will not clean up the house, and you will not put a sign on the house. Many times, I don't mind entering the house because half the time they're left open anyway. Sometimes they don't even have a door. Getting in is not a problem. But I don't want you pushing the envelope and messing around with houses that you don't own and doing things that you don't have permission. However, if you do intend to do some work to the property, be very careful that you don't make any alterations to a house you don't own, and you don't want to spend much money on a house you don't own. Remember, you're selling this house as is anyway. You're selling it as a handyman special, so there's really no reason for you to do much work to it, if any, and you're selling it at a wholesale price. So your buyer is getting a good deal because of the condition of the house, So the most you'll have to do is clean up the premises and secure the doors, maybe, and the windows, maybe. And, again, I don't touch them. I don't lay a finger on them. I don't care how trashed out they are. I wholesale them just like they sit. Now, if you're doing a lease option, there shouldn't be anything for you to do the house except wait until it's vacant and ready for it to rent. When the house is vacated or it's about to be vacated, then it's time to start attracting tenant buyers. If you're forced to do some minor cleanup or carpet shampooing or raking the yard or whatever, you should make sure that this is done before you start attracting buyers to the property, as we're about to discuss. And again, this should involve a little work at most, not a big expenditure, and you shouldn't be putting much money out if you're going to lease option the property out. And maybe a few $100 tops. And once you have possession, you can place a lease purchase sign or a for sale by owner sign in the front yard. And remember, in this case, you either have the deed or you have a lease purchase agreement which gives you possession of the property. So let me clarify on this. If I have a purchase and sale agreement, I don't own the house yet. Therefore, I'm reluctant to do much to it. If I have a deed, however, I do own the house. I can do any darn thing I want to do to it. The day I walk out of that house, after that seller has signed that deed package, I own that house. It's my house. I don't need anybody's permission to do anything to that house from that point on. If I walk out of that property with a lease purchase agreement from that seller with the right to sublease it, I have the same rights. I can do whatever I want to do to the house as soon as I get control of the house or the seller is out of it. So obviously I'm not going to touch it until the seller's out of it, whether I get the deed or whether I do a lease option, either one. But as soon as they're out, then I'm going to get it ready to start attracting buyers to my properties. And that means first thing I'm going to do is put some signs on it. Now, if you need some signs, you can have them made up at any of your sign stores, or you can go to banditsigns.com. That's Bandit, B-A-N-D-I-T, signs.com. You can buy some pretty darn cheap signs on there, and they cater to real estate investors. And there's a lot of others. You probably find some other companies on the online that you can buy them from as well. Okay, step two is attracting buyers. One of the most important ingredients of selling houses, if not the most important, because I can assure you, if you don't attract people to call you about this house you have for sale, you stand very little chance of getting it sold. So it's very important that we do everything we can to get people looking at our house and wanting to get in who may be interested in buying it. It's now time to run an ad, whether you're wholesaling, leasing, or cashing out, but we're going to start with a wholesaling process when it comes to attracting buyers. And in the wholesaling process, again, I rarely ever put out a sign, so the way you're going to sell it is to run an ad in the daily paper under investment properties or a similar column. A three-day ad should be sufficient, and my ad, my famous ad, my ad that always works, no matter where you live, it works for my students all over the United States and Canada, and it never fails. And in fact, the record on this ad is 300 incoming calls in 3 days from people looking for a bargain. It took me 10 years to create this ad, and I have no reason in the world to change it. I suggest you don't change it. But, you know, I know if you're a male and you have high testosterone, you have to. It's not your fault. But before you go changing my ad, you might want to try it just like it is, because I promise you, you're going to get plenty of calls. And here's the ad. Handyman special, cheap, cash, and your phone number. That's it. It's a very inexpensive ad, and it's a very effective ad. And it will drive people to you looking for a bargain. If you look at the ad, you can just see handyman special, so they know it's a junker. Cheap brings out the greed in them. Cash lets them know where they stand very quickly. And your phone number. That's all you need. Do not put the address. Do not put the area. Just put what I just asked you to put in the ad. You'll see why in a minute. Don't add anything to it. If the paper insists that you put anything else in the ad, fight hard not to allow it. It's okay, however, if you want to change, if they make you change the word handyman to handy person. I've had a couple of students that actually had to change that word. It'll still work. Now, you got to make sure that you or someone that you're working with is available to take the calls from the people who are going to call on that ad. Now, your next best choice is to set up a voicemail system. And frankly, in this case, I have no problem at all with your buyers calling into the voicemail system that you could literally leave a message on there, like, the, you know, the house is located at 123 Main Street, and I'm asking $50,000 for it. Just go out and take a look at it and walk around. If you like what you see, call me back, and then you can give them the number to call you back and get a hold of you right on the voicemail system. In fact, this is really what I suggest you do, especially if you don't have time to take these calls, because believe me, if you run this ad for 3 days in the investment section of your newspaper, investment property section, you're going to get a lot of calls. And if you don't, you better go take a look at the paper and find out how they messed up the ad. So be prepared. When you run this ad, you've got to be prepared to take them and or drive them to a voicemail, either one. Now, when you do talk to them, don't volunteer information. Just answer only what you're asked and send the prospects that to the house that you've advertised. Tell them how to get in if they can get in, and tell them the price you're asking, and answer only what they ask you to answer. And when they ask you what you want for the house, be prepared with the answer and don't sound wishy-washy. If you've left enough profit in it for them and there's a reason for them to get excited about the property, just tell them what you want. This is not a negotiation. Don't tell them to go make me an offer. Just tell them what you want for the property and be firm about it. Now, if you've used my formula for making offers on junkers, then you know that you should be asking at or about Mayo on the property. And if you are asking at or about Mayo on the property, then you're not going to have any problem at all getting investors who are looking for a bargain interested in the property. And remember, your minimal markup on this thing should be $5,000. And I said minimal. There's no law says you can't make a lot more on a wholesale deal than $5,000. So if you've got good at buying the property, you should be selling it at or about Mayo, regardless how far below Mayo that you have agreed to purchase it for. Now, there's two reasons you're running this ad. One of them, of course, is to attract buyers, but the other one is to build a buyer's list. So be sure you build a buyer's list in this process. It will become your most important asset as a wholesaler. And in fact, if you do like I ask you to do and build this buyer's list, the first time you're selling a house, you probably will not have to run this ad again. You will not have to take these calls again. You will not have to spend this 3 days dealing with all the folks who call you. You simply pick up your list and call two or three people on there that you like from the last go-around and tell them you got another property available. Go out and take a look, and you should be able to liquidate the house very quickly. In the art of wholesaling, that buyer's list is going to make you an awful lot of money. So culture it, build it, nurture it, and the good thing about selling junkers to bargain hunters is they keep coming back for more product. Unlike selling to owner-occupants, investors are always looking for deals, and if you leave enough money in it from them, they really don't care what you're making, and frankly, if they do care what you're making, you shouldn't be dealing with them. If they get what they want out of the deal, they should be happy with the deal. So just run the ad and build your buyer's list. Send them to the property, and they'll call you back if they're interested. And if not, and if you don't get them to call you back, you can always pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, have you went out and looked, and are you interested in the property, and pick out your real players in the process. And you just continue this process until you get a buyer who wants to give you a deposit and says they want the house. Now, if it's a tenant buyer you're looking for in a pretty house, I'll tell you the first thing that I would do is put out signs. And there's a real art to putting out signs. And, in fact, most of the houses we sell are sold simply with signs, and we don't run an ad. So my suggestion to you is to put out signs the way I'm about to tell you first. And you might want to give it 30 days. And if you haven't found a buyer within the 30 days, then you can run the ad. But you must put a sign in front of the house. I think it's an 18 by 24 sign that says for sale by owner or lease purchase or whatever you want to put on the sign. But the key is to put out pointer signs. I put out 15 to 20 pointer signs on every property that we sell. By pointer, I mean they have an arrow from every direction directing people to the house. And the pointer signs just simply say for sale by owner, and they have an arrow pointing to the house. And you always want to make sure that you put your phone number on the pointer signs, because if you don't, your competition is going to love all the free signs you're supplying them. And a lot of people will take down your phone number and call you without even going by the property. So a lot of pointer signs is the key here. The upside is they work. They always work. Downside is you're going to have to go back and replace them about once a week because they come up missing. Now, if it's time for you to run an ad, then you simply run your ad in your daily paper in the appropriate area, matching the location of the house. In some cities, the ads are run by price ranges. You know, whatever your newspaper, however they lay them out, that's the section that you run your ad. And you should put the words lease purchase or some owner financing in the ads to attract attention. Now I'll point out here, it really doesn't make any difference what your ad says, but you've got to have those key unique selling proposition words in your ad in order to get people to call on your ad. It's how you handle the calls that's important, not what your ad says. And running an ad for, 10 days at a time is sufficient. You can always call a newspaper up and renew it if you don't get enough results out of it. And you can always cancel or extend as you need. Do not put the required deposit or monthly rent in the ad, because you don't really know what the required deposit is, and you don't really know what the monthly rent is. Make sure you don't make that mistake. You can name the sales price, but never name the down payment, never name the deposit, and never name the monthly rent. Because as your calls come in and you capture this information, you're going to be asking your buyers, how much do you have to put down? What's the most you can pay per month? And if you will let them tell you what they have before you tell them what you want, you'll discover that most of the time they're willing to pay. They're willing to put up more per month than you're willing to accept, or they have more than you're willing to take. And you have to play the market. You have to let the market tell you what it can pay. And the minute you open your mouth and tell them what you want, you're not going to get any more than what you're asking. I can't tell you how many students have sent me letters and come up to me in seminars and have told me, gosh, I'm sure glad you told me that, Ron, because I just sold a $150,000 house and a lady called me. She said she's got $30,000. I would have never dreamed of asking for $30,000. So be very careful that you do not poison that opportunity by opening your mouth and telling the market what you'll take before it tells you what it has. You run the ads and the prospects to the house, and make sure they can look in the windows. Remember now, we're on a pretty house. We're looking for a lease option tenant on a pretty house here. So I want to send them to the house, make sure they can look through the windows, and you're not to show the house until the prospect calls you back and expresses an interest. In other words, this is not a business where we're going to spend our life running out to houses, waiting on people who don't show up to show them houses. We're going to send them to the house, and we're going to let them look at the property, and we're going to let the house show itself. In fact, most of my successful students, including myself, buy a lockbox from Home Depot and install it on the front door with a key. You now, instead of meeting them at the house, you give them the code and let them look for themselves. And if they like what they see, you would get a call. If you leave flyers on the counters with the facts about the house and with your phone number on it and how they can reach you. And I'll tell you, when I get these lock boxes from Home Depot, they come already pre-programmed with a code of zero. And frankly, I don't mind telling you that the code to get into all my houses happens to be zero, because I don't even know how to change the code on the lock boxes, nor do I care. Zero is as good a code as any. So when people call up and we want to give them the code, we just tell them the code is zero. That's it. Just press zero and the lockbox will open and the key will be inside the lockbox. Now, I know this sounds scary at first, but you'll quickly discover that the risk of buyers stealing something from a vacant house, I might point out, is far, far easier to deal with than making numerous trips to show houses to people who frequently don't show up, and some of them don't want to buy when they do show up. Just remember, the less I do, the more I make. And we are not going to make a lot of money in real estate by spending our time wasting it sitting in front of driveways at 8 o'clock at night waiting for people to show up. That's not what this business is all about. Okay, I think that's enough on attracting buyers. To recap, we are going to put out signs. And if that doesn't work, if that doesn't get us enough people calling, then we're simply going to, at that point, we're going to run the ads. And if that doesn't work, then we can always put out some flyers in the neighborhood and or even go to direct mail if we have to. But it's going to be rare that if you do the signage like I just suggested and run the ad in your daily paper and possibly even some papers in that area, if you've got some local papers or some neighborhood papers, that would also be a good place to run your ads, because you'll discover that a lot of people who buy properties from you or lease option from you are someone who is referred to you by someone who is living in that neighborhood. And that's just the nature of the beast. Okay, step three is pre-screening these buyers. We've got the house ready. If it's a junker, we didn't do anything to it. If it's a pretty house, we just make sure it's presentable and ready to show. Now we run ads and put out signs, and now we got to pre-screen these callers when they come in. Let's start by pre-screening calls on houses you wish to wholesale the junkers to. All right, so you've run a handyman special ad, and you're getting calls from prospective buyers, and you send a bunch of them out to the property. And now one of them calls you back and shows interest in the property and says they want the house. So before you get too excited here, we got a little bit of pre-screening to do to find out if they're real. Ask your buyer, here's a big question. Here's a question that took me a long time to learn. Because, you see, I don't want somebody tying up my property who doesn't know where they're going to get the money with the intentions of wholesaling it. I'm perfectly capable of wholesaling this house myself. I don't need someone else to tie it up and wholesale it for me. I want somebody to come to closing with cash, someone who can buy it now, someone who can raise the money, someone who has the ability to get that done without my participation. Our objective here is not to help people raise money to buy junkers. That's their problem. And I don't care where they get it. I don't care if they get it from a private lender or from their credit cards or from their own bank account or from their partner. I don't really care. It's not my concern. I do care, however, that they can come to closing quickly and that they can bring cash. So one little question will let me know whether they're real or not, and that is, and when they call in, they say they want it. I say, okay, well, when would you like to close? If the answer is, I'd like to close ASAP, as soon as possible, then you have a real prospect. Any other answer is not acceptable unless you're convinced your buyer is real and they can perform. When somebody tells me they need 30, 45 days to close, all I'm hearing is, well, gosh, that just means you want to tie up my property and jerk my chain and run out my escrow period without me getting the deal done, and I won't accept that. When I put a junker on the market, as far as I'm concerned, if they can't close within 10 days, they can't close. So I'll just move on and take the next caller that calls. If your buyer needs to see the inside and you can't gain entry, if they can't gain entry on their own, then you'll have to make arrangements to get them in. And if no agent involved, this is easy. You should already have a lockbox on it or have a key to it or leave a key on the premises. Getting them in is just not a problem. However, if the agent is involved and you have not made arrangements to get a key, or they won't give you a key and they won't let you have access to the property, then frankly what I do is just tell the people, I don't have a key to get you in. Just go out and take a look at the house, look in the windows, and you should quickly decide whether you want the property or not. And frankly, that's true. Anybody who is going to buy your junkers from you, the people you want on your buyer's list, the people you want to do business with, will find a way to either get in, or they'll get all the information they need just by walking around and looking at the window. Shoot, I know I make offers on junkers by looking at photographs. I don't even have to look in the window. I send somebody out to take a look at it, and obviously they've looked in the window, and just go by what they tell me. When you make offers the way I make them, you just don't need to be that close. And the fact that it needs a little bit more repairs or a little bit less repairs is not relevant. And any good quality junker buyer understands this, and in fact is capable of walking around the property and determining what it needs to, what the repair costs are going to be close enough anyway. You'll be surprised to learn that when you leave enough profit on the table for your buyer, they'll find a way in, and they'll find a way to make the deal work without you meeting them out there or without you giving them a key to the property. Your common sense applied to the circumstances surrounding the deal will guide you to the right choice of what you need to do here. Just use your own judgment. Okay, buyer's called you. Buyer says they want it. You have several choices here. You could meet the buyer at a mutually agreed upon time and location. I would never meet the buyer at the property. Under no circumstances do you agree to meet the buyer at a junker. There's no reason for you to. There's nothing you can show them they haven't already seen. There's no questions you need to answer for them they can't get the answer for by just looking at the property. So you can meet them at some place. I mean, you know, I used to meet a lot of buyers at McDonald's, my branch offices. The food was cheap, the environment was clean, the restrooms were clean, and they didn't charge me any rent, and I done a lot of deals on the tables at McDonald's and Burger King and the like. As the more I learned about the business, the more I realized I didn't even need to do that. I just simply fax them a contract and let them fax it back and send me over deposit. You will run your business the way you want to run your business, but you'll soon discover that there's really no need for you to be chasing buyers around. At the very least, make them come to you, if possible. Don't go to them. And, of course, I know if it's your first deal that you're going to do whatever you have to do, and that's okay. The longer you're in the business, the more you'll know that if they want it, they're going to do what they need to do anyway. So your objective here is to get an assignment of contract signed by them, just a little old simple assignment of contract form. If you've agreed to pay $50,000 for this junker and you want to sell it for $60,000, the form simply says that you will pay me $10,000, and you just tell your buyer, I'll assign you this contract and I'll collect my $10,000 at closing. If that bothers you, you'll have to get over it, because unfortunately, when you're assigning a contract, your buyer will quickly know what you're paying for the property, but you'll learn real fast that that doesn't matter. As long as you have left them enough equity in the property, they will buy it if they see that they're going to get what they want out of the deal. If you set a fair price, don't come off that price, and don't be influenced when people try to negotiate down that price. That's their job. That's your job. So when they ask you, is that the best you can do? I mean, won't you take less? No, I'm taking what I ask. And if that'll work for you, fine. If it don't work for you, fine. Just stick to your guns. Just tell them the least you can accept, and don't show any flexibility here. Because if you get wishy-washy here, then, you very well may cause them not to sign assignment a contract with you, because they think they can get it cheaper if they wait it out and play the game a while. So once you've signed assignment of contract signed and a deposit, and now you're ready to go to the next step. And the next step is easy when you're wholesaling junkers, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But speaking of deposits, you don't really need a big deposit. Contrary to conventional wisdom and contrary to what all the real estate courses will tell you, I don't really care what my buyer gives me in the form of deposit for a couple reasons. Number one, I already know they're going to close quickly because they've told me that before I'll even allow them to give me a deposit. So I just got to believe they're real. And number two, I've discovered that whether they give me $100 or $500 or $1,000, they're either going to close or they're not going to close. And frankly, I can't ever remember the last time that a bargain hunter went to the trouble of looking at the property and giving me a deposit of any kind and getting an assignment, a contract signed, where they didn't show up. They will show up because it's in their best interest to show up. You see, they can't make their big profit until they buy the property. They can't get their payday. You're delivering them a business in a box. Don't worry about them coming to closing with the cash. If they pass the pre-screening test that we just discussed, they'll be coming to closing for cash. And worst case, they don't. And then remember, I'm only giving them 10 days to close, so if they crap out on me, I'm just going to go to my buyer's list and get somebody else signed up. So don't scare them away trying to get a big deposit. $100, $500, or whatever, the deposit is really not that important. Okay, now let's move on to pre-screening tenant buyers for lease option deals or for cash-out deals. When prospects who've inspected the house call back to see the inside, pre-screen them before setting an appointment, if you're ever going to set an appointment. In fact, I don't set an appointment, so I'd give them the code. I send them out to the property. I do not give them the code when we send them to the property. We send them, tell them, take a look at the outside, and then we give them a number to call back if they want to get in, and or you could put a flyer out in the in front in one of the little round boxes or someplace out in the front where they can pick it up with the number on it, which is a good thing, actually, because some people will go look at the property without contacting you first. Either way, I'm not going to give them I'm going to tell them to go out and take a look at the property first, and then if they like what they see, call me back. And then when they call me back, I'll give them the lockbox code. And remember, my very hard-to-remember lockbox code was 0. I just tell them, go punch 0. And, that's not too difficult for them to remember. Now, if they have no money or no credit, and I know they can't afford the payments, by simply asking them a few questions, and why on earth would I even want to give them the code? So I'll send them out, take a look at the property, and then when they call me back, tell me they like it, I say, I'm going to pre-screen them a little bit further before I even give them the code to get in. So even though the lockbox is on the house, remember, they can't get in unless you give them the code or until you give them the code. So if you want to go show the house, well, I guess you probably will in your beginning days, but I bet you you'll soon work your way out of that. Make the appointment only if you feel good about their chances of buying. In other words, why on earth would you ever go to show a house to someone without first finding out whether they've got money or credit? Good credit may or may not be necessary, but they must have one of the two, money or credit. You see, if you're lease optioning a property, then you're going to want this prospect to at least tell you they got a few thousand dollars, because if they don't have a few thousand dollars, you're not going to put them in the house, period. That's it. There are no exceptions. The only way I'll put somebody in a house to lease option it to them is if they got some upfront non-refundable option deposit, so that I feel comfortable putting them in my house. If they don't have an option deposit, they're not getting in the house. The end. However, when people call me who have credit but don't have a deposit, then my objective is to go get them a loan, because I know that I can put people in houses with 100% financing if they got some decent credit, whether they have any money or not. So remember, someone who doesn't have any money or any credit, there's no reason for them to even see the inside, so they've pre-screened themselves out very, very quickly. If they have money or credit and you feel like they're a decent prospect and you want to meet them at the house, then let them go by themselves, and then you could have some applications in the house. That's the way I would do it. Frankly, we don't show houses, even pretty houses. We send them out to the property. We give them the lockbox code when it's applicable. We drive them into the house and let them. There's a flyer on the counter in there that tells them all about the property, and then there's a little application type thing in there that tells them, look, if you're interested in the house, you can either call us back immediately, or you can fax this application to it. The application must state that they're granting you permission to pull their credit. So if you're going to use an application, just have a little paragraph down there that says you're giving us permission to pull your credit to qualify you to buy the house. Regardless of whether you take this application over the telephone or whether they fill it out right there and fax it to you, or whether you send them to your website and let them fill it out on there, just tell them you'll be back to them within 24, 48 hours, and tell them whether there's anything we can do for them or not. And at that time, well, I'll get to that in a minute. But when you remember, I haven't met them yet. I've driven them to the house. They've gone in the house. They've looked at the house. They either like it or they don't. If they don't, they're not going to call you anyway. If they like it, they're going to call you back and keep the contact relationship going. Now, at this point, it's time to meet them. If they say they want the house, it's time to meet them. In my case, they'll come to me. I won't go to them. And they'll come to my office. If I don't have an office, then I'll find someplace else to meet them. But, you know, I don't have any problem at this point. Once you've pre-screened them this far, if you want to meet them at the house, go ahead. Make them aware that they need to bring a deposit with them if you meet them at the house and they like what they see and they want to go forward. They should come prepared with their checkbook. All right, so at this point, we've got an application from them some way. Either we got it on the telephone, or they faxed it to us, or we meet them at the house and we get it filled out there. And at that point, it's when you get at least some kind of a deposit. We usually try to get at least $500 at that point. I won't tell you we do all the time. Sometimes we get a smaller amount. Sometimes we get a larger amount, but we need to get some kind of deposit at the first point of meeting. And then we go to the next step. And that next step is to have your mortgage broker run a credit report and tell you what kind of person you're dealing with, what kind of loan they could qualify for, or what kind of prospect they are. Now remember, when we're selling houses, one of two things are going to happen. We're going to find a qualified buyer who wants to get a loan on the property now because they have some credit, or we're going to find somebody who has some money up front and we're going to lease option it to them, probably without the intent of getting them a loan on the property now. So either way, I want my mortgage broker to tell me who I'm dealing with, and you'll discover that mortgage brokers are more than happy to pull credit for you to find out what they're dealing with, and they'll tell you right then and there, this person will qualify for a blank, blank, blank type of loan, or I wouldn't sell this house to these folks under any circumstances. So when the mortgage broker calls you back and tells you it's a no-go, you probably shouldn't deal with them until you at least find out what the problem is and see if you're willing to live with it. Now, I'll tell you that I put a lot of tenant buyers in properties. If they got several thousand dollars, I'll put them in the property. I'm not interested in them having good credit to put them in on a lease purchase. They can sit in that property and make payments to me and take plenty of time to clean up their credit. But if I got somebody who's got a history of bankruptcies and foreclosures and especially evictions, I don't care how much money they got, I'm not putting them in that property and just creating a problem that I have to deal with later. So if your intent is to lease option, you simply need to know what you're dealing with. If your intent is to cash out, credit is your main criteria for selecting a tenant buyer, but you should always know to whom you're dealing with before you accept them. And again, that's free if you just let your mortgage broker pull the credit report. You don't have to be in the credit reporting business. If you're looking for qualified buyers to cash you out, now it's simply a matter of letting your mortgage broker or loan processor guide you on what kind of loan is available for your buyer. And if you like what you hear, you pass that on to the buyer and let the processor take it from there. He or she will arrange a meeting to get an application. I mean a real formal long application, not the shorty that you needed. And you just let him do his job or her do her job. And if you don't like what they tell you, of course, then you can just pass on them and move on and find another prospect. I hear some magic words when selling houses that I've acquired over the years, and these things are going to be very important to you. And since you have the luxury of playing these back and writing them down, I suggest you do just exactly that until they become your magic words. Just practice. That's all it takes. Play them back and put them in your vocabulary. Let's look at the selling side and discuss a few. These words are only going to be used when selling houses. If you remember in earlier lessons, we talked about magic words with buying houses. So now I'm going to discuss magic words when selling houses. When wholesaling, I want to know my buyer will come to closing with the money and isn't simply trying to jerk my chain. So remember the magic words there were, when do you want to close? I don't ask them if they got money or how much money they have. I just ask them, when do they want to close? That tells me all I want to know. They need more than 10 days. I'm probably not even going to mess with them because I doubt that they're going to close if they tell me they need more than 10 days. If they're going to get a private loan, it just doesn't take more than that to raise the capital, 15 at max. When pre-screening prospective buyers for pretty houses, there's a lot of magic words to use. In fact, it's easier to simply use the whole script. I'm going to go through a script here because these words are all magic. And I can't tell you how many hundreds, maybe thousands of buyers that I talked to before I developed these words and the order in which I use them. So here we go. Early in the conversation, I want to be asking these tenant buyers these questions. And the first one is, do you want to buy or rent? If the answer is they want to rent, then what the heck am I doing with this prospect? They're not a prospect. Remember, I may be looking for lease option tenant buyers, but I'm looking for people with the buyer mentality, not the renting mentality. People who are looking to rent are not going to give you several thousand dollars up front on a non-refundable option deposit. So you're looking for people who want to buy. And if they say they want to rent, everything after that is a waste of your time. But before you give up on them, if they say they want to rent, you might want to ask them one more line that I've developed. And that is, if I can show you how to buy and get you financed, would you rather own than rent? Now, if I still get a negative, they're out of here. But if I get a positive, then I might continue with this. Have you ever tried to buy before? If the answer is yes, I simply say, well, what stopped you? If the answer is no, then I will continue the conversation. And by asking that, it lets me know immediately what I'm dealing with. So my very next question is, and this is one of the most important questions you ever want to ask a tenant buyer or a cash buyer that you're looking for. Remember now, you don't ask this to people who are buying junkers because they're raising cash. I'm only asking these questions to people that I either intend to rent a lease option to or go get a new loan for. So this question tells me real quick what I'm dealing with, and that is this. Is your credit good, fair, or ugly? Now, don't ask them, how's your credit? Some people are ashamed to tell you that it's ugly, and they just simply won't. They'll lie to you. So again, is your credit good, fair, or ugly? Give them multiple choice questions so they won't be shocked if they have poor credit, and you'll get the truth out of them. Well, and if they say, well, it's bad, then your question is, well, what's on it that a bank wouldn't like? This breaks the ice and gets the customer to open up, and I've discovered that a lot of people who think their credit is bad, it really isn't all that bad. A few late payments on their credit is not going to stop them from getting a loan. And in time, you will learn the difference between good and bad credit because your mortgage broker will work with you and help you learn that. So when I say, what is on it your bank wouldn't like, this breaks the ice and gets the customer to open up. So now the big question, how much money can you raise for a down payment? See, by asking that question alone, I know whether I'm really dealing with a lease option prospect or just a credit prospect that I might have to go get a loan for with little or no money. And whatever the answer is, you follow with these magic words. Can you get any more money? Or can you borrow more from relatives? Or do you have credit cards? Or do you have something you could sell or trade me? I love that one. Can't tell you how much stuff that I've taken in on trade when I'm selling houses, cars, boats, trucks, trailers, diamonds, gold, jewelry, all kinds of stuff. It's a fun line. I like to always like to ask, do you have something you want to trade me? And people never think of that. They just never thought about it. In fact, you tell me where you're going to go buy a house and the seller will actually take some of your junk in on trade. I'm happy to because it's all free to me anyway. Or can you repair houses or have other skills to earn money? In other words, suppose I'm dealing with some kind of, maybe a roofer or something. Gosh, I can easily trade his services for the down payment and apply it toward other properties that I'm working on where I might use his services, thus eliminating the need for me paying a roofer. And it's the same as cash. So now let's assume you see someone you can work with and you want them to get excited and realize that you're their solution to home ownership. Well, here's the words that'll glue them to you. I love these words. Well, if you can convince me you want the house and make a commitment to buy it, I'll get you financed one way or another, even if I have to be the bank and finance it myself. So if I can't get you a home of your own, no one in this town can. And what those words do is, think about it. If you're on the other end of that conversation and you're having trouble buying a house, those words just actually cement you to the person. I've discovered that when I say those words, I get more action out of people because they think I'm really, really there to help them, because I am. You show me somebody who really falls in love with my houses, and I'm going to bust my butt to find a way to finance them. And if that means I have to owner finance them sometimes, then I will actually do that, especially if they have some money to work with. These words have sold a lot of real estate for me, and they make an impact on your buyer's level of hope. So follow them up with assurance that you're easy to work with and very flexible, and the prospect will be putty in your hands. And here's some more magic words. We can do whatever you and I agree. I own the house, and I'll do what it takes if you will. Is that fair? Oh, gosh. That just brings cockles to my heart when I hear those words. That ought to be enough magic words to keep you practicing for a while. Of course, these words really aren't that magic, but they're actual words that I use, and I will tell you right now they work. All right, well, let's go to step four, which is closing the sale. If you're wholesaling a junker, your closing agent by this time has probably already got the agreement where you agreed to purchase it, and they either have or you're about to fax over the assignment of contract. So that's it. If you do that, then your closing agent will then simply get a hold of your seller and your buyer and set up the closing. If a realtor is involved, you must notify him or her of the time and the place. But remember, you should be in control of this process. Simply call the agent and coordinate at a time suitable to them and your buyer. But they really don't do anything here except contact their seller and tell their seller when and where to be for the closing. I really don't want them involved any more than that. I'd rather deal with my closing agent myself, keep the realtor out of that loop, and frankly, it doesn't hurt their feelings any either as long as they see it's going to happen. Call the buyer with the time and the place and give them the closer's telephone number in order to get the exact numbers, because they're going to have to bring a cashier's check to closing And so they need to be in communication with the closing agent to get the exact amount they need to bring in and who to make the check out to. Now, if the seller's not present, and many times they aren't, especially if you're buying junkers from out-of-town owners, all that means is that the closing agent has sent a package to the seller to sign and gotten that package back before you set up the actual closing. Closing agent will send out the deed, get the package back, and then they'll call you and say, I got the package back, now let's set up the closing. And then at that point, that's when you just call the buyer and have them go down to do the closing. In fact, it probably takes less time to do one of these things than it did me just to describe it. So in that case, all you got to do is go down there and attend the closing. While you're there, your job is to sit back and be quiet and relax and let the closer do their job. And you'll be surprised how quickly it'll happen. Remember, you're not the buyer and you're not the seller. There's really nothing for you to sign. You've already signed the assignment of contract, so all the other documents are signed by your buyer or by the seller. And once the buyer has come and gone, and all that's left for you to do is get a copy of the file and your check, then you make a copy of your check, and you got to send me a copy of it because that's your responsibility, you see. Once you pick up one of these checks from one of these deals, you got to send me a letter and a copy of your check. It's the law. It's federal law. It's a requirement. Now, you might be wondering, what happens if I put the buyer and the seller in the same closing room? Well, simple. You don't. You have the seller go down and get it closed, and you simply tell the closing agent to tell the seller and or the realtor that you want the seller to come down and get it closed, and the buyer will be coming in later. And of course, if it's an out-of-town owner, it's not a problem because this is all done by mail anyway. But it would be good if you kept the buyer and the seller out of the same room. I mean, it's really not all that important, but I know it'll cause you to lose sleep at night if they're in the same room, so just tell your closing agent to make sure that they don't get together and let them handle it. They do this all the time. They know what they're doing. Now let's move on to a lease option buyer. If you like your prospect, this one's rather simple. Just set an appointment to meet. Go over the terms of the agreement and meet on all the issues, including the length of the lease and the late penalty that you want to charge, and make sure that they understand that the repairs are their responsibility, as they are in all my lease purchase deals. Discuss pets and make sure that everybody's agreeing on the purchase price and how much option deposit and how much a monthly rent and all of that. You really need to have a meeting to get all of this stuff ironed out. Make sure we have a meeting of the minds. And once that's done, while that individual is with you, I pick up the phone and call the attorney and set an appointment for the buyer to go sign the lease and the option agreement. And here's a big warning for you. I do not want you to be in the attorney business. I do not want you preparing your own lease agreements to put tenant buyers in properties. And I want you to let your attorney handle this for you. So this means that you had to have a meeting somewhere along the line with a real estate attorney and tell them that you would like for them to handle your lease option deals for you. And I'll give you a bunch of reasons why that I strongly suggest you do that here in just a second. Make sure your tenant buyer knows at this meeting that they must take to that meeting with the attorney the balance of any money they owe you for the deposit, plus the first month's rent, plus the fee that the attorney says that they're going to charge to prepare that lease option agreement. And it's really important to me that you don't try to practice law here. And I'll tell you why. Here's several reasons why I want your attorney to handle this transaction. Number one, he or she will prepare the agreement so you don't have to. That puts you out of the agreement business, and that ought to make you feel better. Let them prepare them. Number two, it's free to you. Your buyer's going to pay for it. And it only costs anywhere from $150 to $300. It's not a big deal. So if it's free to you and you don't have to do the agreement, that in itself ought to be enough reason to let them go to your attorney's office. Number three, your buyer will know it's professionally done and feel more comfortable with the deal after the excitement wears off. And number four, less chance of buyer demanding a return on their option deposit later when they decide to move. Remember, this is a non-refundable deposit. It's clearly stated in the agreement. They've signed that they are not going to get it back if they move. And you're going to have less chance of them even trying to claim it if an attorney closed a deal to begin with. And besides, the attorney is going to clearly spell that out when the lease is signed. And the fifth reason is, what a great witness that they do want to dispute it, the attorney who actually closed the lease. And truth is, if you just take my word on this, trust me when I tell you that if you let your attorneys close these things, you're rarely ever going to have a problem after the fact. If you don't let your attorneys close them, you could understand that your tenant buyer might feel like they got taken advantage of, and then they're going to have questions. So just let it be done professionally for all the reasons that I just stated. Now, if you want an excellent lease option agreement to sell houses, whether they're pretty or you're installing a work for equity tenant, go to goffn.com. That's goffn, financialfreedomnetwork.com, and join our Financial Freedom Network. It comes with three websites, one for buying houses, one for selling houses, and an intranet site loaded with hundreds of forms and agreements. And the lease option agreement that I spent $6,000 to have prepared are on that site, along with a list of benefits as long as your arm. So if I were you, I would not do a lease option agreement without going and getting that agreement off of there, because that thing will save you an awful lot of grief. And there's an awful lot of stuff in there that you won't get in any other lease option, much of which I had incorporated in there with all my years of experience. Okay, the only kind of buyer left is one who's applying for a loan, in other words, a cash buyer, and one that's not going to move in but going to go get a loan and close and then move in. The old-fashioned buyer, the kind that everybody's looking for, the kind that's going to cash you out now. So at this point, you've already talked to your loan processor and determined if your prospect will get a loan and will qualify for a loan, and you can live with it and your buyer can live with it. So it's simply a matter of calling the prospect, or calling the the mortgage broker, and having the mortgage broker call the prospect and set an appointment for the prospect to come in and get the application process done. And you just stay out of that. And you certainly do not need to be at that meeting. You have your mortgage broker call your buyer. The mortgage broker will tell the buyer what to bring, make the appointment, and do what they're paid to do. And then when it's time, all the docs are in pre-screening process has gone by and they've done all their verifications, and the mortgage broker has done their job and set up the closing and taken all that work off of your back, then you just go to the closing and pick up a big fat check. That's it. Cash sales are not complicated because you're not doing any of the work. Once you have pre-screened the buyer and turned them over to the mortgage broker, you're out of it. You just simply check in from time to time and see how it's going. And of course, the last step is to take your family out to the finest restaurant in town and celebrate. You got yourself a big fat check. Now go deposit it and go celebrate. And don't forget to tell them why, and make an announcement that every time you close a deal, you're going to go celebrate. Watch how fast they get interested in your business. A few trips to fun places also wouldn't hurt. And I like it when you make your family a part of your business and everybody gets involved in the business. It just makes it such a fun business when you do. So I know that this doesn't cover everything you'll need to know to sell houses. In fact, I could probably write a book on any one of these processes, and I have on several that I just described. And if you really want to get deeper into this, we do a 3-day training on it called Selling Houses Fast. And it covers a lot of stuff in 3 days. And, you know, things like there's the auction method to sell houses, the round robin method, staging houses, how to sell high dollar houses and problem houses, and getting weak buyers qualified. And we have autopilot systems for selling houses and using technology and all kinds of marketing tools and numerous other subjects that I could go on forever about. And I know I sound like a broken record, but if all this stuff interests you, do yourself and your family a favor and get some quality training from the pros who walk the walk. Go to my website, ronlegrand.com, or call my sales department at 800-567-6128 and ask about our training on selling houses fast. In fact, here's a free offer for you that I recently did an interview with a student of mine. His name is Chris Kirshner from Atlanta. Chris used to work for UPS at a pretty decent salary, actually, until he met me and he got his life back. Today, Chris buys and sells 6 to 10 houses a month in the Atlanta market, and he's created an autopilot system where he never talks to a buyer, he never shows a house, and he's truly mastered this business, and he's a true practitioner of the less I do, the more I make. And since I did this interview with Chris, I I got an agreement with him that I will send you this tape. I think it's a CD, actually, and I'll be happy to do it at absolutely no cost just because you're listening to this series. By the way, Chris's normal profit, his average profit on each house is $30,000 a month. He does 6 to 10 of them a month. You figure that out. You do the math. So if you'd like to get Chris's CD and where I interviewed him on his system, simply take out a piece of paper and write down the words free Kirschner CD. That's free Kirschner, K-I-R-S-C-H-N-E-R CD. And you got to put the following on it now. You got to add your name, address, phone, fax, and email. That's name, address, phone, fax, and email. Just take a piece of paper, write free Kirschner CD, put your phone, fax, address, and email, and fax it to 904-262-1464. That's 904-262-1462, and I'll have one of my staff send you that free CD at absolutely no charge just for buying this course. So with that said, that concludes this lesson on selling houses fast.